This is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. We speak with Cal Soto, director of and attorney for Workers' Rights of the National Day Laborers Organizing Network, known as ENDLON. Cal looks forward to the day when everyone can enjoy the fruits of their labor free from fear and exploitation. Cal Soto, give us a profile of the people that ENDLON is working with and the circumstances and conditions that they face and the issues, which are no doubt exacerbated in the midst of this terrifying corona pandemic.
The labor rights attorney for the National Day Labor Organizing Network, and our membership is largely made up of the hundreds of thousands of day laborers throughout the country, those workers who stand outside of hardware stores, on corners where there is a lot of activity of construction contractors that are willing and able to do pretty much any type of gig work, so a job that is not long-term usually, but one that in any given day needs some kind of helper or some kind of additional hand project. So a lot of times that is in the residential construction industry, but not always. It also includes gardeners, restaurant workers, dry cleaners, car wash workers, any service industry business and other business that requires some kind of a extra working hand on a piecemeal basis. Our workers are directly tied to many of the most vulnerable industries that are right now being hit extremely hard by the fact that this coronavirus is stopping people from being able to hire some of the first workers who are left completely vulnerable without any safety net to fall back on, because the majority of our members don't have work status or are having trouble being able to come back, enter back into the workforce. So that represents many immigrant workers. It also represents workers who maybe were formerly convicted people reentering the workforce and have other challenges because of background checks, because of other issues that arise that make it very difficult for them to reenter the economy. That's the majority of the day labor workforce, and they represent a shrinking fraction of what is this growing beast of the gig economy or the precarious worker economy, which right now suddenly being thrust into the public view because we can see very clearly that without a strong social safety net, many people end up in 1 week of crisis being thrust into complete destitution and inability to live, survive, feed themselves, provide a shelter for themselves. And that is becoming more and more the regular condition of the American worker. But these workers, day laborers and domestic workers and other workers that have been in this state for a long time, they are right alongside those other gig workers without having any kind of safety net for them to fall back on. So we are currently in the midst of this coronavirus crisis that is representing a compounded crisis of being able to survive here in this country for the next, now we're not talking about the next month, but really for the next week for many of our workers. We are currently looking at ways to be able to step in and build community resources, build mutual aid that will hopefully be able to meet that gap in some way that is not going to be met by federal stimulus packages or many state stimulus packages, even though we'll push very hard to make sure that these essential workers and to make sure that they're able to make it week to week and day to day.
Cal, if you could just put a human face, just pick one of the workers whom you have been involved with and talk about what has happened to them and what their lives are now.
One worker I could talk about, say Pablo, is a worker that has been a part of a very strong labor justice committee that we've built here in the Los Angeles County area. The way that they experience this crisis coming on is that, you know, Pablo wakes up every morning and he's a really skilled drywaller and is able to get most Mondays, Tuesdays, or Wednesdays, is able to at least get a four-day job for the week to be able to cover expenses. It really felt like it hit for workers on the corners, day laborers, jornaleros in Spanish. It felt like it was from one day to the next, suddenly all the traditional employers coming through to the corners, coming through to try to find helpers, find workers to help on their jobs. There's suddenly absolutely no work, and that was about 15 days ago here in California. And for someone like Pablo, they've been without any type of work for over 2 weeks, which for any worker here in this country, that would probably cause a crisis. That's exactly what had happened to Pablo, who thankfully was able to find some work yesterday. But there's not a lot of hope that they'll be able to continue to provide for themselves, that they'll be able to make even this next month's rent that's coming up in a few days. They have no illusions that they'll be able to actually access some kind of federal funding or some other kind of stimulus funding. Pablo is one of hundreds of thousands of workers that is really facing that reality. There's just no construction work coming in, no other work coming in terms of cleaning, in terms of other businesses, because those businesses have largely shuttered. And those workers are now economically left in an extremely dire position. And that's not even to mention, I think, their vulnerability from a health perspective as well.
Carol, in terms of the exclusion of undocumented and documented workers from the provisions of the new stimulus package, and including anything having to do with health care, why don't you talk about health care and what options are open for immigrant workers in terms of health care and what needs to be done there?
The workers who go out to the corners, in many ways, themselves, exactly the population that we're hearing is particularly vulnerable to this disease. Most day laborers, or many day laborers now, are over 55. They have preconditions because they've been working, toiling away every single day for their entire lives, and the toll that takes on your body. Then they've been doing that usually without any regular health care because they don't have access to a public program. They don't have access to quality health care. Like, many workers don't have access to quality health care here in the country. That's just to say that they are particularly vulnerable to this virus by every metric that I know. And they also have not had access to much regular health care. If you look at IFS nationally, many immigrant workers don't have the ability to access Medicaid or Medicare. Thankfully, there's some states here in California. We have Medi-Cal, which has more accessibility to the broader portion of the workforce. I think other states have their specific structures that help, and that's essential right now. But there is generally a void in that health care. And so what that means is a lot of these workers have already had their health really at risk. I mean, there's a reason why, for my organization, we're a workers' rights organization, we're an immigrant rights organization. But so a big part of what we do is in the sphere of health and safety for workers. Why? Because immigrant workers are oftentimes the highest numbers of work-related accidents and work-related deaths. Unfortunately, this is something that we are all really locked in on and really afraid of what the outcomes are going to be regarding coronavirus on day laborers, because we know that they have these preconditions. We know that they also deteriorate their health on the job, and they're still continuing to need to be out and about to try to make a living. So the access to health care for these workers, it's very minimal. And so I think we're all very, very concerned about that.
Cal Soto, whom we're speaking with, a labor rights attorney with Endlon. It seems to me that flows from another reality that we have to deal with. We can go from the stimulus package, which was signed by Trump, or the emergency measures provisions that reflects the fact that it's absolutely skewed against any priorities and actually is contemptuous quite clearly of migrant workers who are rather used as a target for scapegoating. So they are continue to be dehumanized and excluded. And if anything, what's happened is they've ramped up the provisions. Certainly we're experiencing that in New York, where people are subject to ICE and PB, which is hell-bent on terrorizing communities, accelerating deportations, and increasing the detained population. So can you talk about that as an offshot of the coronavirus, which is not only a health threat, but is also causing the administration to accelerate its human rights violations against these populations of the workforce.
Well, there is no better example of the skewed value set that this administration has than the fact that they are pushing and rushing to try to reopen of any of their public services, to try to reopen the immigration courts, which have no practical use during this time of necessary social distancing and when we should be pulling away from those systems and trying to get people out of detention centers where we know the risk of spreading the virus is much higher than inside those detention centers, inside those jails, than outside of them. Instead, this government is, as you said, pushing to try to ramp up their enforcement and trying to get more resources for ICE, more resources for CBP. The fact that they have huge orders of masks for ICE enforcement officers, again, another example of those incredibly bizarre set of principles that they have. But it's not something that is surprising to immigrant rights advocates, because that has been the charge of this administration, to use the scapegoat of immigrants as basically their buffer to fire up the base, to fire up the people who will politically support the administration. And there was no doubt in my mind, and I think many other people's minds, that as soon as this crisis started to become something that was going to be this kind of long-term issue, that they were going to find a way, this administration, to try to place it on the backs of immigrants and try to use it to push along their, what I would describe as their white supremacist agenda, to basically kick out as many, or bar as many immigrants of color from being here and being able to be a part of this country and continue to participate in a public way, as they have for a long time, and thrust that into the shadows again and terrorize those families. So yeah, this administration has taken measures to expand that enforcement. They aren't slowing it down in any way, in spite of the fact that I think all indications, the doctors, medical professionals, think that they should be. And they are going to continue to use it, although it's been somewhat nonsensical for some time. They've tried to use this racist perspective of this virus being somehow connected to China. That's a whole other xenophobic position of this administration. But for such a long time, their target, Latin America, south of the southern border, has been actually slower to grow in this virus. But as those populations grow, as that spread of the virus continues south, I think we're going to hear more and more of that rhetoric, even though we would think it doesn't make any sense. They'll use this as a pretext to shut down borders, to criminalize specifically certain kinds of immigrants, and use it to hope for them they want to try to win the election in 2020. That's kind of all that they care about. And they will absolutely expend the lives of people in order to do that. So we've seen that, and I think that we're continuing to see that priority race to the top.
And in terms of food security, which was part of the package also that was passed by Congress, and other things that might be of help to your community, what is the status of that on the state level also? And is there any kind of way that you could see, or at least state governments, to ramp up protections for your workers?
As far as I see it, that the way that we're going to be able to make sure we don't have thousands of more people dying and falling into abject poverty over the next few weeks is going to be through a state and local level political action to really pressure those governments to create structures that will provide those resources where the federal government will not. In many states, that means very large portions of the population need to particularly be included in any kind of statewide safety net packages. So food is a good example. One of our immediate goals was to figure out how our worker centers could be involved in broader work other than just the day-to-day of what many of the centers do, which is dispatching jobs. A large portion of our worker center members, which is represents over 50 worker centers all over the country, where workers can come and safely negotiate their jobs, not be out in the elements, and also receive training and receive other kinds of organizing benefits that come with having a group of workers in one place, being able to set wages and being able to sort of negotiate jobs. And so those centers now are not dispatching jobs because there is a very significant slowdown in most of their cities where they exist. And so instead of shuttering, many have tried a virtual dispatch system, but more importantly, they're sort of turning to local mutual aid projects. And so what you bring up with the food is really pertinent because a lot of those centers, like the center here in Pasadena, are becoming essentially food bank centers that not only have the ability to deliver or hand out food to very vulnerable communities, but also can work because of their advocacy experience, have been working to push very local governments, state governments, to basically provide that food. And so there's plans to try to push the city governments to actually themselves buy many, many pounds of rice and beans that they can have for the next few weeks to be able to hand out. There's a lot of push to get those state governments to include new unemployment structures that are disconnected from the federal government as a way to allow those infrastructure programs to allow those programs.
Can I just interrupt you longer on that since you mentioned that? And it seems to me the issue is not food banks or various other things. The question is how to get cash to people because people have to pay their rent if they're going to be rendered homeless, etc.
That's what I was trying to say.
The issue of the food banks, I mean, and it's not a kind of voluntarist process. So I'm just wondering about what efforts are being made by Endlon to deal with the issue of unemployment benefits, extending them, workplace protections, other ways of getting cash benefits to people who, of course, were affected by things like the federal public charge rule or otherwise. Mm-hmm. It's, again, the unemployment benefits, sick leave benefits. Is there a full court press on that by Endlon as well?
Absolutely. I mean, you're going to see letters coming out to many state governments, some coalitions of groups like ours that are pushing them to like try to expand their unemployment benefits, try to expand their paid sick leave laws, family medical leave laws, in order to cover this population of workers that right now is going to be completely left out of a federal package. And so you're right. I mean, the food is an essential part of this piece, but really the thing that would bring it all together is how do we get those direct cash transfers to workers who are left out of those packages, who are very vulnerable, and who move around a lot. So we need to use our local infrastructure, organizing structure, to be able to identify those workers and figure out how to pass through money. And so we created a fund, the Worker Safety Net Fund, that is a new effort of ours to direct a lot of the outreach, and it has been a huge response of people wanting to figure out how to help these specific workers, how to get them, make sure that they are also covered along with other workers when we have this type of stimulus come through. And so we're trying to match those people who want to donate money, donate resources, and very quickly just funnel it directly to where we know the workers are. And we have
and pressure on governments, local and state governments, because voluntarism is fine. But for the kind of monies that we're talking about to sustain people, this really entails government action.
Well, yeah. So this is the Worker Safety Net Fund is one aspect of that plan to create those mutual aid groups. The other aspect of it is this advocacy side that we're pushing, you know, the states like California, letter to Gavin Newsom to be able to expand, you know, paid sick leave, to be able to expand their unemployment insurance programs. We are pushing for those things, and it's something that has to happen. Public funds actually be created in certain areas, again, like Pasadena, like Palmdale, and we hope to see it in other places as well. I mean, New York City is one that has a huge immigrant workforce that has basically makes that place run. And a lot of those workers are going to be completely left out in the cold if not for that city, not for that state, creating some kind of state public funding source. Yeah.
And I have to also say, since we mentioned ICE before and the Department of Homeland Security, et cetera, To what extent is Enlon got a campaign and working on the release of tens of thousands of people who are locked up in ICE DHS custody and tens of thousands of asylum seekers who are forced into MPP and blocked from getting their families and communities in the U.S.? Is that part of Enlon's work?
Yeah. So we have the Migrant Justice Plan has been something we've been pushing throughout this election cycle. That is a real on-the-ground, base-level advocacy perspective. What should be being talked about in this election hasn't been, I would add, in order to actually address specific needs of the migrant worker community. Part of that plan is the Worker Migrant Justice Plan, and there what we are calling for is protections that would be afforded to undocumented workers that we believe should be afforded all workers in terms of paid sick leave, unemployment benefits, but that also includes stopping programs like MPP. MPP program is the Migrant Protection Protocol, which is a program that allows DHS to keep individuals who are seeking admission into the U.S., many of them like asylum seekers, and not historically they were allowed to apply and have their asylum applications or other applications be reviewed while they were here in the U.S. safely. And MPP, the Migrant Protection Protocols, is something that they aggressively started to ramp up during this administration in order to keep those people while they're waiting, keep them outside of the U.S. in very unsafe conditions, or keep them detained in camps essentially right outside. And so they've been unsafe for a long time. It's just even particularly more unsafe now that we know that those conditions are ripe for the spread of the disease. We want to end the MPP program that forces 60,000 asylum seekers to remain in Mexico while they're awaiting their asylum applications. It's a completely cruel program that will only force those workers to be more sick. And we also want ICE and CBP to stop being a threat to local communities here in the U.S. that really serves only to exacerbate this issue. They are not in any way necessary right now, especially. I might argue they are maybe not in any way necessary ever. But specifically right now, I think it's clear we don't need to be using federal resources in order to do targeted enforcement of day laborers or domestic workers or factory workers or whatever worker in this country who right now are struggling to stay healthy and struggling to make ends meet for their families. So, yeah, it's a completely cruel situation that we are witnessing, and we really need people to stand up. People who are able to shelter in place need to think about the uncertainty and the fear that they feel about the situation and try to relate that to people who, on top of all of this situation we're all experiencing, also have in the back of their minds that maybe they're going to be chased after, or maybe they're being targeted by some ICE agent that's going to show up to their house or show up to their place of work right now. And that's just unconscionable to think about. And I think people should take that anger and the disgust, I hope people feel, and then turn that into action to push against the federal government overreach in that area.
Cal, is there any final message? What is the clarion call from Enlon to our listeners?
So I think we're exactly hitting on this one specific point, that we have a lot of action. As hopeless as the situation seems and as disconnected as we all feel, there has been hope that we've seen in being able to reach out, calling and pressuring local governments, specifically when it comes to not forgetting this class of workers that is often put aside, often cut out of bills, as we've seen, often put as like the secondary class of workers that we need to think about. These are the workers who are most vulnerable right now, who are most vulnerable to this economic crash, and who, if we do take no action, they will continue to get sick. They will continue to suffer. And we are sitting here allowing it to happen, allowing these governments to basically ignore them. So we need to step up and be a voice at this point. You know, I don't often say that we need to be speaking for other people. I believe in the base speaking and being able to be clear on what they need and what they see as the problems we need to resolve. And that's true even right now, but it's so difficult, you know, for those workers who are out on the corners who don't have that contact. We can really do a lot to be that voice. So call your local governments, call your mayors, call your city council members, your state representatives, and make sure that they, in all their stimulus packages, which I hope that they're pushing for even more money to help the American worker, to help workers today, make sure that they also include these workers, the contingent gig workers, undocumented workers, day laborers, domestic workers, when they make those plans.
And Cal, your website for people who want to be in touch and to help the organization?
Yeah, you'll find resources and ways to pitch in at www.ndlon.org. There's both N as in no, Endalon, the National Day Labor Organizing Network.
I thank you so much for taking the time. You stay safe mentally and physically, because we've all got an enormous amount of work under ordinary times to do. And good gracious, we have to really move further and come out of this goddamn pandemic with a better understanding of the rights of workers. And they are human rights across borders. So thanks so much, really. We've been speaking with Cal Soto, director of and workers' rights attorney of Endalon.
We get the job done.
It's a hard line when you're an import, baby boy. It's hard times when you ain't sent for braces. Feed the belly of the beast with they pitchforks. Rich chores done by the people that get ignored. Ya se armó, ya se despertaron. It's a whole awakening. La alarma ya sonó hace rato. Los que quieren buscan, pero nos apodan como vagos. We're the same ones hustling on every level. Ten los datos. Walk a mile in our shoes. Abróchense los zapatos. I've been scoping y'all dudes. Y'all ain't been working like I do. Why y'all work ya? It hurt ya. You claim I'm stealing jobs. Oh, Peter Piper claimed he picked them. He just underpaid Pablo. But there ain't a paper trail when you living in the shadows. We America's ghostwriters. The credit's only borrowed. It's a matter of time before the checks all come. But
immigrants, we get the job done. We get the job done.
Look how far I come. Look how far I come. Look how far I come.
Immigrants, we get the job.
Yeah.
It's America's ghostwriters. The credit's only borrowed. It's America's ghostwriters. America's ghostwriters. The credit's only borrowed. It's America's ghostwriters. The credit's only borrowed. It's America's.
Immigrants, we get the job done.
This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.